Welcome to SNC's podcast series, SNC Critical Insights. Today we're joined by Audra Cohen, co-managing partner of SNC's General Practice Group and co-head of the firm's Consumer and Retail Group, and Jim Bromley, co-head of the firm's Global Restructuring Practice. Audra and Jim will be discussing trends in the consumer and retail sector in the lead-up to Black Friday and the holiday season. Audra, Jim, welcome.
So, Jim, with the 2019 holiday season approaching, it seemed timely to think about the challenges being faced by traditional brick-and-mortar retail companies such as department stores and other traditional small and large format retailers. There's been a lot written about the trend of consumers not wanting to spend time physically in stores, but to pick up their pre-ordered shopping outside or shop via Amazon and other online sites, and that this is having a very large impact on brick and mortar. For example, we've seen recently the bankruptcy filings for Forever 21 and Barney's, continued struggles of other department stores like JCPenney's, and even seen traditional retailers try and acquire an e-retailer as a way to address some of their challenges, like the PetSmart acquisition of Chewy's. Can you discuss some of what is driving these events and what legal or other step retailers should be considering taking proactively?
Well, Audra, the fourth quarter of every year is critical to retailers. The vast majority of their revenue is generated in the fourth quarter, and so it's always at this time of year that we think about, well, what's happening with the retailers. But this year's a little different because over the past couple of years, there's been a lot of talk of the retail apocalypse, and we've had a number of retailers, brick and mortar, traditional retailers, the ones we grew up with, collapsing. We've had Sears go into bankruptcy and shut down thousands of stores. We have, just in the last week or so, Barney's and Forever 21 have filed for bankruptcy. And it forces us all to sit back and say, well, why is this happening? It's easy enough to say that tastes change, but tastes have always changed. One of the things I think that we're facing is sort of a day of reckoning with respect to the overbuilding of U.S. retail. In 2018, for instance, the United States had 23.5 square feet per capita of retail space. This compared to Canada at 16.8 square feet per capita, the United Kingdom at 4.6 square feet, Germany at 2.3 square feet. So that means that in the United States, we have 10 times as much retail space per person as you have in Germany. And I think to a certain extent, we're finding that that's just too much. And so it's not just the Sears of the world, but the Starbucks of the world, the McDonald's of the world that are bringing down the number of locations. And that is being accelerated by the Amazons, by e-retailers, and by the issues of that that you pointed out, which is that people are more looking for ease and convenience rather than, you know, a traditional shopping experience.
So what do you think the follow-on effects of these trends are going to be on real estate, given that whether it's due to the number of locations, because some have thousands, to large format of the stores like Sears, how are commercial real estate owners going to fill these sites, or how are retailers that need to shrink their overall footprint but have leases that have not yet expired, how are they going to address some of these pressures on their business?
Well, I think, you know, the two things that you mentioned drive, I think, what we're going to see is a new era of cooperation and imagination where real estate developers and retailers are going to have to work together to figure out a new way forward. So if you take a traditional department store, for instance, and we'll just focus on size for a moment, a traditional anchor department store at a traditional American mall, usually about 150,000 square feet. That would be a two-level store at the end of a mall in suburban New Jersey or Ohio, or we can all imagine them from our childhood. In the vast majority of those stores, no one is even going to the second floor. The stores are twice the size, three times the size of what they need to be. And so you're seeing a lot of imaginative ways that retailers and developers are changing those locations, where you might take the store and cut it in half. You might have half of it be a workout center, or sometimes it's even a medical facility. There are malls that are transitioning from pure shopping experiences to restaurants, movies, bowling alleys, Dave & Buster's, and changing the environment and the size of that environment. Then there's also just the sheer number, right? And you have to think about, say, a store, a chain like Toys R Us, which when it filed for bankruptcy had about 800 big box locations in the United States. Two problems with Toys R Us, too many locations, and each of those boxes was too big. And one of the things that folks didn't realize was that in the sort of the last 5 years of Toys R Us, one of the things that was driving its growth was baby supplies. And one of the things that transformed their results was the fact that people started ordering diapers and formula to be delivered to their front door rather than going and picking them up. And so some of it becomes obvious in retrospect, but you have to kind of take those examples and play them forward. And I think that's one of the things that we need to be thinking about. The retailers, they need less space, but the landlords, they do need the people to continue to operate them. And so there's a push and pull. If you want the next Toys R Us to occupy every one of those 800 locations and say, that's what we need and that's what we're going to hold you to, then you're likely to drive that retailer out of business.
I'd be remiss if we didn't talk a little bit about the debt markets and the ability of these retailers to refinance or raise new money, because we know the debt markets are constantly changing. Are you seeing any trends with respect to financing for these brick and mortar retail businesses? Are covenants tightening, or is there more pressure on leverage ratios or other new trends that we're starting to see develop?
Every retailer tends to have two types of financing. The first is the ABL facility, and the second is a longer-term debt component of some sort, whether it be bonds or term debt. And what you're seeing on the ABL side is that the lenders are demanding a higher level of collateral and being more aware of covenants, because the last thing that they want to have happen is to find a bankruptcy occur and they're unable to cover. So generally speaking, the ABLs are robust and the ABLs recover well. Indeed, sometimes a bankruptcy is a benefit to the ABL lenders, because what happens is they're able to then transition into a debtor in possession facility. And in the right circumstances, those debtor in possession facilities can be very lucrative, both in terms of fee income as well as protection. The second layer of debt, which is either a bond facility or a term facility, they're the ones that are kind of stuck in the middle. Because what you're looking at is usually a security package that's inventory junior to the ABL and on the real estate junior to separate real estate financing. And so you do have a lot of separate real estate financing through kind of opco, propco structures. And it's that middle layer of debt, which traditionally had been seen as the fulcrum debt that would allow you to take control of the company. That's the one where I see the greatest pressure, because so many retailers have, spun out of control in the past couple of years, that sometimes what you thought you wanted, which was the fulcrum, is exactly what you may not want, because then you find yourself holding the bag.
Well, thank you so much for sitting down and talking, and hopefully, let's revisit this maybe in the first quarter and see what we learned from 2019.
Well, thanks for having me. Make sure you go out and shop this holiday season.
I will, I promise.
Thank you for listening to S&C Critical Insights. For more information about our practice, please visit us on the web at www.solcrom.com.